speaker is Joyce Reynolds. She is working at the ICANN IANA organization in California, and she had worked with John Pastel for the past 15 years. I have known Joyce for 10 years, most from IETF meetings. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Joyce.
I want to make sure, yes, can you hear me? I have my microphone that says on, but you never know. Good morning and welcome. I was invited here today to discuss and talk about the history of IANA, the impact of ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation of Sign Names and Numbers, and also what ICANN is doing and will be doing in the future. First off, I'd just like to give a little background when we talk about history. We were at a dinner last night, and Leslie Daigle, a colleague of mine from Canada, we were always making a joke of World Wide Web is not the Internet, but what is the Internet? Is a domain name an IP address? No, not necessarily. And there's still a lot of confusion on what exactly is the Internet. Currently, it is the largest network of networks, and it does use the transmission control protocol and the Internet protocol and packet switchings, and it can run on any variety of communication networks. Now, how does the Internet work? When we're talking about protocols and identifiers, these are procedures in the formats that are used to enable computers to talk to each other and be able to communicate with each other globally. And to support this, they share common knowledge of identifiers. These could be anything from port numbers, which we use to call sockets, to protocol numbers, to anything from point-to-point protocol, to new protocols. But they all need to interact and universally intermesh with each other. Now, when I was an undergraduate at University of Southern California, I decided to take an elective class in Renaissance history. And the reason why I bring this up is when we were trying to discuss what is the history of the Internet, the first thing out of my professor's mouth of history about Renaissance is someone did not wake up one day and say, ah, I'm going to invent the Renaissance. It took a long time in coming to where it arrived in that period of time. The Internet as we know today was the same. One person didn't wake up one day and say, ah, I'm going to invent the Internet. Now, the matter of time didn't take hundreds of years, but in the years of what we call Internet, this is a very, very long time. So just to give you a timetable of what we call ye olde ARPANET, which is Advanced Research Projects Agency, which was affiliated, which is still alive, but affiliated with the Department of Defense in the United States. 1969 was the starting point of what we now know that has evolved to the Internet. The people's name here that you see are sort of the founding fathers of the Internet. There's no real one founding father. There were many, many. Our running joke to this day, well, who was the founding mother? But they haven't really figured that out either, so. But Professor Kleinrock had a lab of graduate students that included Dr. Steve Crocker, Dr. John Postel, and Dr. Vint Cerf, among others, who were key players in developing the ARPANET. What this is leading up to is IANA and ICANN. But just to give you a background of where we have been and the major milestones of the years from 1969 all the way up to the current, actually, and where we've come, and we being everyone affected by the Internet here. And I've been doing this since 1979 when I was a graduate student, and I am amazed at what I've seen just in the 21, 22 years that I've been involved in it. And I smile because it was the most priceless time to me to be involved with John Postel and all of the work he did, not only with Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, but also with the RFC Editor Project. He was a project leader of things I worked on with him, but most of all, he was a division director of over 77 projects at the time of his death. And why this is so important is he left us way too soon. He had just turned 55. And he was at the pinnacle of developing what is now known as the Internet Corporation of Assigned Names and Numbers, along with IRA Magazine or of the U.S. government, to transition what we knew as IANA into a more stable, formal, and global management of what we call our domain name parameters, domain names, protocol parameters, and maintaining the root servers. So what exactly is IANA? It's threefold, actually. It's technical management of functions, including the root, IP addresses, IP address blocks, and also protocol parameters and port numbers, which were assignment functions defined by the Internet Engineering Task Force, and that was primarily what I was doing with him, and also the domain name systems. Especially, he managed the .edu at the time and .us domain. These were performed at my facility that I still work at, Information Sciences Institute, which is a part of the Department of Engineering of University of Southern California, and is now a part of ICANN. Now, when we're talking about the spans of history and just what goes on over time with the Internet, this is just a sample between 1997 and the year 2000 of where the global statistics have gone in just this small amount of time. We also have statistics of users on the Internet that were drawn off of a survey site, and these were current to July 2000. This may be updated since this slide was made. I checked two, 3 weeks ago before I left, and I did not have an update to these. But if you would like to look at the World Wide Website, it's www.nua.ie. Just some more statistics to look to see what is going on with our user trends in the Internet. There is a projection, while we think it's been growing by leaps and bounds in the last few years, there's a projection of what it may look like in the year 2009. Now, obviously, there is a need for change, and was a need for change starting in 1996 when John Postel was attempting to set up the Internet Corporation of Assigned Name and Numbers. Major reasons, obviously, is the globalization of the Internet, the need for commercialization of the Internet, and that is twofold. One, it is global. Two, the IANA and a lot of the protocol parameters were maintained under a funding grant from the Department of Defense, the Advanced Research Projects Agency. After 25 years of doing that, the U.S. government said, thank you for all your work and development, but we are not going to fund you anymore. That was okay, because evolutionary-wise, it should be growing and keeping up with the globalization of the Internet. So what does that need? That needs accountability. It needs more formalized management. Yes, we must have the lawyers in there too. And also, there was a lack of competition. At the time, domain names like .net, .org, .com were maintained by one facility, which was Network Solutions, under a grant from the National Science Foundation that people felt was a monopoly. And that wasn't good. And in the United States, as you know, we're not real thrilled with monopolies. So there needed to be a transition of opening this up to competition for a registrar. The other major important milestone here is there was beginning to be an increasing problem with trademark and domain name conflicts on an international level. So all of this required a need for a change. So the year 1996 is very important because John initiated what was called the Internet Ad Hoc Committee with support from our Internet Society to institutionalize the IANA, and this was very important also because to institutionalize the IANA meant, it's not incorporated per se, but find an umbrella to put it where it would not be vulnerable to lawsuits or for the people who worked on the staff and the service of IANA were not personally sued. But as everything, when you're trying to blaze new trails, there's lots of many ideas and lots of people who feel it should be only their way and their way only. So it didn't quite come to closure. But the point is, it started. And in 1998, at the request of President Clinton, Ira Magaziner was appointed to work with John Postel and others in the internet community to find a form of neutral industry-sponsored oversight committee, a nonprofit corporation, and that IANA could nest in as a small operation of that. And a white paper was developed. Now, this white paper, again, stressed about stability, opening up for competition, not just one registrar, and also a private bottom-up coordination and representation. So, the nonprofit corporation meeting this white paper's four criteria ended up to what we know as today as ICANN. And the U.S. Department of Commerce is the one who is working with ICANN through what we call the transition of transitioning from U.S. government to this nonprofit corporation. There was also an amendment that Network Solutions would agree to open up for competitive registries in the generic TLDs. And also a request went to the WIPO to study and recommend solutions about trademark and domain name conflicts, and that's because they're a global organization. Just because one thing, or a trademark in the United States, might not necessarily be a trademark in other countries. So the creation of ICANN actually officially came about in November 1998. It is incorporated in the state of California after much discussion that it could be incorporated outside the United States in other countries. And at the time, they decided just to keep it in California, and that's where it remains right now. It's located, the offices are located in Marina Del Rey, California, in the same facility as Information Sciences Institute. So ICANN was tasked in 1999 to start organizing and spread out the components about setting up their board, setting up the SOs, which were the supporting organizations. I'll show you an org chart in a few minutes, and getting their membership going and advisory committees. And people said, oh, why did we need ICANN? Why couldn't we have just stayed the way we were? And essentially the reason is ICANN had acted for 30 years in the trust of the internet community, which essentially was John Postel with a small staff, to assure that disputes and proper technical functions were continuing and flowing and things would not stop. And that's a very, very important bullet here, is to tell you that everyone trusted John Postel. He kept this as a service. This was not, I am in power, I am the almighty czar. It was, John says, I will hold the key to this, and if you entrust it with me, we will be all right. And they did that for over 30 years, and I think that's quite an accomplishment for a man to be able to function like that, and the trust of the community. But even though, whether he had passed away or not, these functions are still critical to a whole process, and it's on a global level. And it was time for him to let go of that and have it on a bigger basis with a global and rapidly growing medium. And he foresaw that it was time to let go of it and to nest it in a place which ended up to be ICANN. So what was the basic idea about ICANN? It wanted to be, and still is, an experiment. It's an in-process thing right now, in technical self-management by the global internet community. And what is the basic idea? Again, internationalization and policy functions. And the reason why the word policy is there now is we used to operate a long time ago. The P word policy and the R word requirements were things that we in the internet community didn't really want to get near. In fact, in the IETF, suggestions and recommendations were more of the keywords. But policy needs to be set up. Rules and directions and coordination are the part of what ICANN does. And also its private sector about non-governmental management. And this is again why U.S. government said you must pull away and set this up in a different way than it's been administered in the last 30 years. So in the transition, it's been going, in some people's eyes, very, very quickly. On the other hand, some of us think it's been going very, very slowly. But ICANN was recognized with the U.S. government in a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, There was a cooperation agreement signed among ICANN and the U.S. government and what we call the root servers operators. And Network Solutions and ICANN did sign a generic top-level domain registry and registrar agreements. This is the first step in opening this up to competitive registries. And our root server, Department of Commerce, agreed that the transfer of the root authority of the domain name system goes to ICANN. And the 9th of February of this year, there was a contract set up between the U.S. government to complete the transfer of this operation inside of ICANN called IANA. The major challenges in getting ICANN to work, first off, like anything that's starting up, is funding. They first started gathering funding and also mechanisms for gathering global consensus building about what ICANN can serve and perform for the community. Also managing the transition from the monopoly to the competition. And the other main one was also the trademark and domain name conflict. Many, many people think they know what ICANN performs for the internet community, but what exactly does it do? What is it spelled out in its charter? It coordinates policies relating to unique assignments of our internet domain names, IP addresses, and the protocol and parameter numbers. And it coordinates the DNS root server system. So it's a coordination effort. The policy objectives for the year 2000 would be opening up new top-level domains. These are the generic, the GTLDs, not the country codes. At-large membership elections where the community can vote members onto the board. Country code TLD agreements, the Internet Protocol Address Registry agreements, and root server agreements with all participating parties in the internet community. Now, the target date for this to be totally completed was supposed to be this last September 2000, but it's been extended out with the Department of Commerce to be September 30th, 2001, and that's just because a lot of the items listed here are taking a lot of time to solidify. Now, when I opened earlier today about domain names and IP addresses, the domain names are what we know as familiar, easy-to-remember names, .com, .se, .edu. But internet protocol numbers and IP addresses are things that the domain names correlate and that serve as routing addresses in the internet. So there is a difference between the two of them, but they are related to each other. And the domain names translate the names into IP numbers, and that's for the routing of the packets for information over the internet. So this is another way how the internet works between domain names and IP addresses. We have two categories of domain names we've been mentioning here, the generic top level and the country code. We are still in process in opening up opinions about new generic TLDs. This has been going on since 1996 and it still has not been resolved, because everybody thinks that we have all sorts of different new ways to .shop, .arts, .me, .u, etc. Country codes are a little bit more formal, because early on, John Postel decided that as IANA could not decide what country codes should be assigned. The ISO had a list, and that is what IANA operates off to this day, is the 3166-1. Now, countries sometimes come and go. When the Soviet Union dissolved, the list was expanded out to invite the .Georgia, not .Georgia, but the Georgia and Ukraine, etc. So the ISO 3166 tends to change from time to time, even though it should be a stable list. But it is our definitive list that we work off of when someone says, I live in a country and I would like to administer as the manager of the country code. The major issues with domains right now are still problems with copyright, trademark, and ICANN set up a uniform dispute resolution policy, which is called UDRP, which if you have a conflict and you say someone's using my domain and I have a trademark over it, no matter what country you're in, there is an optional way to, besides waiting for the courts to open up for years and years, is to use this UDRP. And basically it does apply to .com, .net, and .org, not country codes. It's different. And so we have that issue, which is, for example, the rock star Sting, he wanted to have a domain dispute because there is a sting.com. Also, there's a lot of cyber squatting of people purchasing common names and saying, I have your name, I have a price in my head, I will sell it to you. Now, Sting did not get the .com because he never registered Sting as a trademark. A woman in the rock environment was very, very bright when she started her career. She trademarked the name Madonna. A cyber squatter had Madonna.com. He still does, but a court ruling came down in the United States that he was not allowed to have it because she had trademark priority and copyright over Madonna.com. And he wanted to sell her Madonna.com, and she went to the court. So I thought that was a good story as far as what's going on. This is with everyone, not just corporations, et cetera, McDonald's.com or IBM.com. The other one is competition about registry services. We can't begin to emphasize again about monopoly and the provider and to realize that they could set the cost of how much you could register your domain for. And at the time, it was at one time up to $100. And then it went down to 70. And now with the competitors, you can have anything. I've seen sometimes the domain names start at $3 US. Also, new top-level domains. ICANN met in Yokohama on July 16th to make resolutions and decisions on how to go about competing and deciding about new generic top-level domains besides the usual that we have had in place for years. And a new one that came on board in the last year or so is the internationalization of the DNS characters, not just US ASCII. And this is a problem for the technical bodies, but ICANN needs to be aware of what's going on because they are administrating domain names. And also, the big point is interoperability. So, structure of ICANN. This is what it looks like. We have SOs, as I mentioned, supporting organizations. We have the domain name, address supporting, and protocol supporting. Those three are there that are helping with the interests of each of their specialties. And in the ICANN bylaws, there was a movement to provide these three starting supporting organizations to review and develop recommendations. We also have directors. And these roles for the directors are 3-year terms. Currently, these are the ICANN board of directors. We've had two being replaced right now, one for Korea and one from Germany. It is a 3-year staggered term. And the supporting organizations work with the ICANN board of directors and basically help with the substantial policy recommendations for matters lying within the organization's charters. Now, while all this structure is very bureaucratic and formal, there is a core set of staff that make IANA work and ICANN work. The current staff is our president and chief executive officer, Mike Roberts. The vice president and general counsel is Louis Tuton. Chief policy officer and our chief financial officer is Andrew McLaughlin. We do have a registrar liaison, Stan Halloran. IANA staff is made up of Michelle Skipper, who is the IANA administrator, her administrative assistant, Bill Huang, and I am there as IANA, as a continuity, I guess, as Mike Roberts was calling me, you're Ms. Continuity. I worked with John Postel on IANA since 1983 until his death, and while my major project right now is RFC editor, that's what I am a project leader about, we needed, in this process of transition, to have someone who had the history, that now that John's gone, to transition IANA appropriately to ICANN. And it's a very, very hard when you have something that you've known for 18 years to bring a new staff on and just say, here, teach it. So I'm mainly there to help and not consult, but I'm sort of on loan out from Information Sciences Institute during the transition. And last but not least, very importantly, is our network administrator for ICANN, who is also helping transition all the servers and all the intellectual property of IANA off to ICANN, and ICANN setting up their own servers. In the transition, Information Sciences Institute and its servers have been basically the ones that have been supporting ICANN until they got on their feet. Now, we're mentioning at-large membership. Besides the supporting organizations, we wanted to make sure that there's an openness to the voting. And an at-large membership was set up a few months ago where you could either, someone could nominate you or you could throw your hat into the ring to be part of this membership. And they had a voting going on, which was closed October 2nd, I believe. And there are people who will be, I think, five set to the board at-large membership that will be on board hopefully by November 2000. But since this was something new and something that was sort of wanting to be transparent, they're going to do a study about how this membership went, how the voting went, and there's a membership implementation task force which will be studying what went on with this. And they say, well, why elect them? Well, again, there's a transparency issue, accountability, and representation. And it should be not U.S.-centric anymore. Diversity of views and distributed architecture of selection. But again, when you're on this board, it needs a high-quality level of folks sitting on the board. So some people say, well, you might get someone on there you don't like. Well, that happens. When I sat on the Internet Engineering Steering Group and a gentleman was appointed, someone said, oh, this is horrible. He's going to try to tear everything down, and he ended up to be the best person for the job in there. So just because you think how they act one way, when they get into a position, it might turn out very nicely. It depends. Now, this is the fun part of the talk, is what do people, again, think ICANN is? No, it is not a cyber government. It does not have an inherent or coercive power. It does have a charter that's very spelled out, and it's not a substitute for powers of government in any form. People call the ICANN offices saying, you can do something, you're the law, you're the police, go out there and do something. Well, they coordinate, they don't regulate. And the technical coordination of these values sometimes require accounting for non-technical policy interests like data privacy and intellectual property and trademark and competition law, but it's a coordination effort. What ICANN does not do, network security, it does not do that. Spam. We have many, many phone calls to the ICANN offices saying, stop spamming me, stop spamming me. And it happens to be a public network address that someone somewhere else is using. So sometimes our running joke inside the offices is, stop spamming me. No, you stop spamming me. No, you stop spamming me. And then they say, well, do something about it. Well, part of this is still an issue of data privacy practices, and it's not in ICANN's purview. Pornography, hate speech, copyright violations. ICANN can listen but cannot do anything about it. Deceptive business practices is something for a type of a business, Better Business Bureau. They've had many phone calls come in when someone said, I signed a contract, and they've reneged, what do I do? And they said, well, did you read the contract first? No, I didn't read the contract, but I want ICANN to do something about it. And that's very common. It's scary, but it's very common. And also technical standards, network surveillance and traceability. No, we do not do that. And no, ICANN does not provide internet gambling for the community. ICANN is also not a technical standard setting body, but because it is rooted so deeply in the internet community and where it was born, it does follow the standards making decisions that go on in various entities, including IETF and ITU and other organizations. ICANN is not an internet police force or a consumer protection agency, an economic development agency, or a legislator or court, though they do have many lawyers on board, but that's not their purview to do that. When we mentioned that ICANN was considered to be an experiment, One thing that they were concerned about was, now that it's been on board for about 2 years, what exactly are the lessons learned from developing this nonprofit corporation? Basically, that a private sector self-management is possible, but it must be narrowly chartered. And global consensus to this day on policy is difficult to define, but it's much more harder to achieve. It takes a lot of hard work. Consensus is a tradition in the community I've come out of, which is the IETF. Rough consensus, sometimes if that's the best you can do with implementation of protocols, then that's the way to go, because sometimes you'll never find the absolute correct answer on what you need. And since we're also dealing with the human factor, we all have different opinions, attitudes, and ideas on where things should be nested or go. And so consensus on the policy questions can be elusive because it depends upon subjective values. So this is ICANN, just a touch of the iceberg. The ICANN does have a web page with a lot of information on it if you would like to know more about all of the workings and other presentations. And it's www.icann.org. And in closing, I would like to